How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. All right. So, it's your boy, Sean, joined by the man who, if you play cards against, he'll cheat. If you want to play 21, he's got 22. If you want to play blackjack, he's got two of those. You want to play aces and eights, he's got too many of those too. Steve OG.
What?
Join us as we open the Extreme Wrestling Archive, ECW Return of the Funker. So, the name of this kind of fucking ruins it, but whatever. All right.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah. So this takes place February 25th. I have 2019. It did not
take place.
It was 1995. The ECW Arena. Philly, PA. Attendance was 1,150, so they overpacked them. Your world champ last time was Shane Douglas. He defended against Tully Blanchard and won. He's still the champ this time. TV champ last time was Dean Malenko. He didn't defend, so he's still the champion. And your tag champs, as we saw at the very end last time, were Taz and Sabu, or as I like to call them,
Taboo.
Taboo, as they defeated the Public Enemy in the double tables match.
Thank you.
Now, the reason no titles changing hands there, there was actually no TV tapings between, there was no kind of tapings between double tables and this card. Well, they did like promo stuff, but no matches, nothing like that. So a lot of recaps and a little bit of promo is what was fulfilling the 3 weeks of television. Also, I'd like to talk a little bit about how ECW is kind of picking up. They recently were expanding to Florida. That's kind of where they picked up
some viewership.
Yeah. Well, they picked up Ron Simmons. Remember, he actually was an All-American, went to Florida State, and he legitimately played under Bobby Bowden. Bowden? How do you say it?
Bowden.
Bobby Bowden. Unlike people we went to high school with that claimed to play, they almost played for Bobby Bowden. So he legitimately did for 4 years. Didn't really get a career going off in the NFL, so he went into wrestling. And that's kind of where they picked him up. Now, this past month or so, they've been expanding to the MSG network in New York. Kind of
that's Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, it's WWF territory.
That's the one Chinese food.
Not the salty.
Preserve.
Butter. Yeah. So, apparently, from what Todd Gordon was said, they set this up or whatever, and Paulie's like, oh yeah, I got all these advertising, because they had to pay to be on these stations, and apparently Paulie didn't have any advertising lined up, so Todd Gordon was apparently paying out the nose for these...
blocks of time.
Yeah, and then he couldn't cover all of it with his commercial of, what was that, his pawn shop. So... kind of sucked they were losing money there, but they were just trying to expand their reach at this point. As I mentioned, no TV tapings really during this 3 weeks, just kind of Joey Styles doing some promo stuff. They did acknowledge one thing, though, actually, in February 1995, actually, the passing of Eddie Gilbert. So he died of, like, a heart attack on February 18th, so about a week prior. So he had a heart attack. He was in a massive, like, car accident, 1983. A lot of chest injuries, but I mean, I'm sure wrestling didn't help. Probably painkillers. Who knows what they took back then to beef up as well. He was actually found in his apartment by Jason the Terrible. Kind of met him last week. So
that was a nice thing for him to do.
Yeah, to find him dead.
I mean, someone had to.
Yeah. So they did a nice little recap. Little promo package dedicated to him, which was nice. And then also in real time in 2019, in July this month, they actually released the network, the WWE Network, released 12 ECW of these super cards that you could only get on the tape trading network prior to this. They released them on the network, including November to November 1994, which was never released.
Now it's out there.
Yeah. So, and it's going to be in pristine quality. So I actually haven't even had a chance to check it out yet. So we'll see what's going on. So first off, we get an opening match graphic. How about that? Well, not an opening match, but a graphic to the card. And we cut right to the Pitbulls and Chad Austin. Excuse me. We cut right to the Pitbulls versus Chad Austin and Joel Hartgood. How do you feel?
Because if you're going to have a bunch of tag team matches, you may as well start with one.
Exactly. And what the fuck, Chad Austin? A couple episodes ago, I said how he was... I said, like, a farewell goodbye to him as he was supposedly leaving for Smoky Mountain Wrestling back in late 1994. But
he's back.
Yeah. Apparently, he trolled me into thinking he was going. But maybe Chad Austin was actually trolled by Jim Cornette saying, hey, I'll bring you in next month. But never bringing him in the next month. Much like he did to Raven previously. So, well, here he is. Chad Austin back with Joel Hartgood versus the Pitbulls. Basically, we start off Pitbull 1 just destroying Chad Austin. Austin does get in some sloppy ring work. Wasn't impressed compared to where he was previously. He does get a tag in to Hartgood, which he just gets destroyed by Pitbull 2. I did notice, however, that this Joel Hartgood character, which is actually just a rib on Joel Goodhart, who ran TWA, which was the predecessor to ECW, he has like a full back piece. In 1995. It wasn't really a thing, was it?
Apparently it was.
Well, maybe he was the innovator. Although it was much like a lot of people who Brock and it's not filled in anything.
That girl in Waterworld had that tattoo, that map of dry land on her back.
What?
Huh?
What are you talking about?
The movie Waterworld?
Oh, I was thinking of the theme park.
No. Thinking of the movie where the... Would the girl save humanity because she had a...
A tattoo of a map.
She had a map of dry land on her back as a child.
She was the chosen one.
And I believe that movie came out like 95 or 96.
Yeah, it had to have been right around there, 94-ish.
Kevin Costner had gills. Thank you.
I think he has gills in real life. So, power moves galore I have written down here. And then they basically just finish it off with the very awesome super bomb. What are your thoughts on that?
Super.
What are your thoughts on an opening tag match?
It was quick.
Yeah, it was.
It was very quick.
Basic squash match.
A what?
Squash match.
Hmm. They were wrestling, weren't they?
Yeah.
Not playing squash?
You're an idiot. But it did get the fans pretty hyped, actually. They did get into it. Right. So, not too shabby. So, cut to the curtain, and we hear come out and play. As Raven and Stevie come to ringside with Joey Styles, do a little interview. Raven, he cuts his what I call a MTV Daria promo, where he's just basically Debbie Downer. And eventually, Dreamer comes out, confronts Raven, because, you know, they're trying to build this feud here. I do like that Raven tells Dreamer to unleash his anger on him, and Raven will not retaliate. And then quote the Raven, nevermore.
Thank you.
Right. Stevie, he then gets on the mic. He introduces the former tag team champions, Tony Hitman Stetson and Johnny Hotbody, from way back.
Way back in the 94.
Yeah.
The early 94.
The late 93s, even. This basically is like the start of Raven's Nest, which comes a mainstay here in ECW. They are introduced as the Broad Street Bullies, which is a hockey reference to the Philadelphia Flyers.
What is this?
The Broad Street Bully.
What is this hockey you speak of?
It's very big in Philly, but it's a game played on ice. Walls fighting.
There's ice in Philadelphia? Yes.
And a puck, which is a
ball. What's your language?
A ball, or it's an object that has no air in it that you play with and hit at each other. Unlike a soccer ball or a basketball.
It's like a brick.
Basically. Alright, so Dreamer, he comes back out and as they're kind of jaw-jacking on the mic and lays everyone out with a nice big stop sign, which was interesting. Dreamer, he gets in Raven's face a couple times and Raven stands there, doesn't retaliate, much like he said he wouldn't, but eventually the Broad Street Bullies and Stevie are holding Dreamer back. Raven bum rushes him. And the two brawl, which looked like a pretty heated battle there. But they eventually get broken up by various wrestlers as Styles states there must be some kind of previous feud between the two. This actually was labeled on TV as Raven's special attraction. So they knew this was going to happen, which is kind of funny. That's about it for that promo. It was nice seeing the stop sign action, but basically the start of Raven versus Dreamer. So, loser kicks on by Beck.
By Beck.
Yeah, as Mikey and Hack Myers walk out.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jason and the giant Paul Lauria, they're actually already in the ring. So we have our next tag team match. Our next match, which is another tag team match.
Which is more than one person fighting one person.
Correct.
Again.
Jason looking jacked and oily. Always good. The Shaw, Hack Myers. I figured it out. I Googled it. It's not Puss Shaw. It's the Shaw, Hack Myers. And that's what the fans say.
Makes more sense.
So Pearl Harbor by the heels, quickly reversed by the faces, and we get some wonderful tandem tag team offensive moves by just these two dudes put together. They're not a tag team, they're an established tag team. Anyway, we get stereo sunset flips, which actually end up getting us stereo flashes of ass by the heels. So we see both of their asses. So more male nudity.
Which is what you're into. So.
Which is my favorite. So we got some good tag work by Hack and Mikey. They destroy the giant Paul Lauria for a lot of the match. So I don't know if Jason just couldn't wrestle or what, but they do cut to
Maybe they wanted to showcase.
What's that?
Maybe they wanted to showcase the giant.
By getting his ass kicked constantly?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe they were trying to get over a new jobber.
At the jobber, he can go to the jobber convention.
Right. The jobber Olympics.
Ooh. So we cut to some big dude in a black hoodie with a purple mask. What are your thoughts on that?
Say that again?
We cut to a big, massive dude standing at ringside with a black hoodie and a purple mask on.
It's weird. Yeah. It's a weird thing to do.
Yeah, I don't know why he was standing there. He just kind of showed up.
Maybe he's like a... like a vigilante superhero.
Basically.
That was there.
He was waiting for a crime.
Right. He was just there to like make sure nothing bad happened. Yeah. Or maybe like somebody snuck in without paying the ticket fee.
And wore a mask and stood at ringside.
I mean, if you're a vigilante, you don't want people to know your secret identity.
That's true. Okay, so. Mikey, he goads Jason, goads him into the ring, and takes the heels to the outside with a nice like head scissor / head takeover combo. So Mikey hits him on both the heels, gets him to go to the outside. The Shaw, he does come back in and hits a super dick kick on Lauria.
Mm.
So he puts him up for like an atomic drop, but instead of dropping him onto his knee, he just boots him.
Testicle smashing.
Yes, correct. We need some more of that. It's been way too long. Lauria finally tags in Jason, and he gains the advantage, but slows it down, which gets kind of boring. They do a very gay, like, double team where they almost, like, hug each other on the top rope. It hilariously gets a pop from the fans. So it was really funny. More gay double teaming by the heels. A lot of intimate double teaming here going on here. So... Mikey, he takes a frying pan to the head, which is your least favorite.
We don't need that.
Foreign object.
I am anti-pan.
More double teaming gives the heels or keeps them having the advantage. The giant, he locks in the surfboard. At this point,
I think they should call it a roly-poly.
That's a good one. I think it had some different name in Mexico. Well, it had a Mexican name.
You mean Spanish?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Whatever that language is.
It's Spanish.
Oh, okay. At this point, the tracking goes haywire on the tape. So for about 5-7 minutes, we just get tracking bars.
Scrambled pornography.
Yeah, basically. But we do see a reverse rager... Jesus. A reverse razor's edge by Jason on Mikey. little more tracking difficulties, and Mikey, he gets some shenanigans on Jason, kind of playing possum, but then fools him, but ends up getting face planted from the top rope by Jason. So ultimately, his shenanigans failed.
Per the rules. If you shenaniganize, it's over.
You have to be shenaniganed. Okay. Hot tag to the Shaw as he runs wild on the inside. Mikey, he eventually hits a bulldog from the top on Loria, and we get a bunch of broken up sloppy pins between the two teams. Stop signs and chairs to Jason on the outside as the monstrosity in the purple mask, who would have known? Good thing they got a shot of him before the match, so this makes sense. The purple mask, that's what we'll call him, I think. The purple mask attacks Hack, places the giant on Hack for the three and the victory for the heels. What are your thoughts on that?
Because the first tag match was so short, this was just like a regular match, but it felt it went on for forever. But part of that may have been because of the lack of being able to see it for a good portion.
Yeah. They anticipated there'd be tracking issues.
Right. Yeah, it was just like, oh, radio.
So for me, this was real fun at the beginning, but it, like, with the double team tandem moving, it was almost like watching the Rockers back in the 80s. But it really fell apart. It got really sloppy towards the end, and then slow, and then as well as the tracking issues in the middle. So, too long, didn't enjoy it overall. Like I said, the beginning was great, but after a while, it kind
of
got boring.
It was like the second longest match of the card, yeah. And not the second most important match.
Correct, like it should be. Any other thoughts on that one?
None.
All right, so next up. Yeah.
Singles match.
Yeah. Unheard of. We got Too Cold Scorpio versus Hector Guerrero. Why the fuck is Hector here? I don't know. Hector Guerrero, he's from the famous Guerrero family, Eddie, Chavo Sr., all of them. But he's most famously known for being the Gobbledygooker.
School what?
The Gobbledygooker.
Huh?
At the 1990 Survivor Series.
What?
He was dressed up like a turkey.
Huh.
And danced in the ring.
Huh.
That's interesting. That's his most famous spot. And then he would relive it again at, I think, WrestleMania X7.
So the gimmick battle royal. He has a turkey costume.
Correct. And he's on call. For 24/7.
Various turkey related needs.
Yes. Which are very few and far between.
Okay.
Too Cold Scorpio, you know, he's a good hot flyer as well as a wrestler. And I think this was kind of supposed to be like the purest technical wrestling match
ever.
No, I mean of the card.
Okay.
So we'll get into it.
Like ever?
No. So beginning with the feeling out process, a lot of reversals, you know,
grabs, stales meets, if yes. You will.
Nice head scissors by Scorpio takes Hector to the outside. Hector, he puts like a pump handle hold on Scorpio, and then turns it into a backbreaker, but only gets a two. Hector puts on a lot of rest holds. He's like a 70s, 80s wrestler, you know, so doing a lot of that old school.
Vintage techniques.
Try to garner heat via stalling and rest holds, but unfortunately that just doesn't suit this ECW crowd. So Hector, he does take it to the outside, does use an audience member chair, which does kind of get a little pop there. But then he tries a pin on the outside, which was rather funny.
Because you can't do that.
In a regular
match. It's an indoor activity.
Yeah. So he kind of pisses, like, jawjacks with the ref. We get a couple more reversals in the ring. Gets nowhere. Finally, Scorpio, he hits a power bomb, which was pretty nice looking, but only gets a two. And Hector rakes the eyes.
Mm.
Post power bomb. But hilariously, right after that, Hector then pokes Jim Molyneux, the ref, in the eyes, which got a nice chuckle from me. Because that's like, I don't know. I think it's hilarious when you involve the refs for some reason. Scorpio, he misses a couple moonsaults, more than one. Hector hits the Oklahoma roll, but only gets a two count. Scorpio, he does hit a rock bottom, which was nice in 1995, but only gets a two. And then Too Cold Scorpio, finally, he hits the 450 splash for the 3 and the victory. Thoughts on the match?
Quick and painless. I mean, painless for us. Painful for
Hector Guerrero.
Hector Guerrero.
All right,
quick and painful.
Yeah.
If you asked him.
All right. For me, this match was not that great. It's nowhere near like the Benoit Snow.
From last time. No.
From last time, yeah. Which I'm thinking was supposed to kind of be like that. Too many rest holds. Hector, I feel like, just didn't fit in with this crowd in this match. He did give it a try, as in using the fans, going to the outside a little bit. But these two, they just didn't work well together. Didn't work well for me. So, didn't enjoy it.
It was a good try.
Yeah, exactly. But it didn't live up to any expectations.
It had no hype and lived. didn't meet it. Yeah.
So, cut to Ian running to the ring and grabbing a barbed wire baseball bat before it could be placed on the pole from one of the ring attendants. This kind of is segue right into the next match. Axel, he slowly walks to the ring, grabs a chair to protect himself, and then we have our next match kind of slowly starting here. We have Ian versus Axel Rotten in a barbed wire baseball bat, no longer on a pole match.
A rotten match.
It was supposed to be a barbed wire baseball bat on a pole, but it never made it to the
86
pole.
Correct.
So this stems from the last one, which we talked about how the Rotten Brothers had broken up. They just had a match last time. It was a good bloody match. This time, let's escalate the violence a little bit. We still got this feud going on. Ian, remember, got the cheap pin last time. So we didn't get a clear-cut victory, so why not make it more bloody?
Plus, you need a hardcore match on the card.
Correct. So we got bat versus chair to start. Both very cautious at the beginning. Ian, he then takes a swing at Axel, but only gets ring post and apparently a stinger as he drops the bat. This causes Axel to grab the bat, and he does connect He does connect on Ian and let the violence begin. Ready?
It hasn't begun already. He hit him with a fucking bat.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The bat was the beginning of the violence. Before that, it hadn't begun. It had just been teased.
You asked me if I was ready for it to begin, though, and it just began.
Okay. Yeah, I guess you're right. So, Axel, he rakes the back. He rakes the bat on the back of Ian's head, busting him open immediately. Dude, it was nasty. Ian, he regains the advantage with a chair, a ring post, and a nightstick. Mm. Basically everything but the bat.
Various things.
Eventually, he does get the bat, and they do get into the ring. He gets some shot in on Axel. Quick cover. Only gets a two. We quickly go back to the outside and over the rail into the first row. At this point, you can see Ian's back of his head. He's a goddamn bloody mess, which is what gets me all giddy inside. Ian regains the advantage with a frying pan, your least favorite. And eventually, the bat raking Axel's forehead. So he's dragging the barbed wire across his forehead. Make sure it gets nice and bloody. Bat shot to the leg of Axel actually adheres to the inside of his spine, which is nasty. The bloodthirsty fans cheer. More raking across Axel's forehead, busting him up in a little more. More bat shots. Ian, he does set up the bat in the corner on the top rope.
Where it should be.
He tries to whip Axel into it, but according to the rules of wrestling, if you set something up, most notably on the turnbuckle or around the turnbuckle area,
it's supposed to backfire.
It has to be used against you, which it does, as Axel reverses it, and Ian pretty much takes a face shot to the bat. Axel, he then does rake the face, the arm of Ian. He does get in some nice barbed wire bat choking, which is pretty brutal. Throat, as I hear, it houses some pretty important veins.
Pipes.
blood pipes. Veins and arteries there. Big shot to Ian's head. Only gets a two. Axel, he hits a nice clothesline from the ring apron to the floor. Does he do it for that? I don't have anything else. That's the end of that. I thought there was more.
End scene.
I thought there was more to that sentence, but that's it. So they brawl onto the bleachers, and Axel hits a nasty suplex onto the bleachers and then drops an elbow. That had to hurt both of them. It's kind of funny. He takes a belt right off a fan. And you can actually see the fan having to rebutton and re-zip.
Because his pants are falling down.
Correct. He also had a chain ball.
Obviously.
Which I would have taken the chain ball as opposed to the belt. But Ian does whip Axel with the belt. We do get a little more bat action as we head back towards the ring. Ian, he hits a pile driver as both of them spill to the mat. Ian, he hits a second rope splash onto Axel, who had the bat on his midsection. But that did not get a three. Axel, he regains the advantage. He hits a front-facing pancake on Ian, gets the three and the win and a huge pop and an ECW chant. What are your thoughts on that?
Bloody Sunday.
Very bloody.
Was it Sunday? It wasn't a Sunday. Well, I guess Friday or Saturday.
Who knows? You should look that up.
No, too.
Well, so post-match, Ian, he gets a couple more shots in on a bloodied Axel. Thus continuing the feud. Where can we go from here, though?
It's into the future.
Personally, I love this shit. This is what I want. I'm happy. Fans are happy. Are you happy?
I'm happy.
Okay. Thank you, Rotten Brothers, for putting yourself through this for our entertainment and enjoyment.
February 25th is a Saturday. Thank you.
Yeah. It's a bloody Saturday. Any other thoughts on that match? No, just a bloody warfare. Definitely overtakes the last two tag matches, so.
For sure.
Kind of getting me back into it. This is when we cut to fucking Marty Jannetty.
Uh-oh.
What the fuck? He's facing Shane Douglas, of course.
For the heavyweight championship.
Yeah, how is Jannetty in line for a title match?
I have no idea.
I want to know.
I do not know.
I need to know. Who has he beaten?
No one.
He beat Shawn Michaels a couple of years ago.
Was somebody sick?
He was the last man.
Did he win a contest?
Yeah, he won a satellite. Like those poker tournaments where you have a satellite to sit.
It was a lottery?
Basic. That's the only thing I could see. Fucking somebody drew a name out of a hat or something like that.
He was picked last for
fucking kickball.
Yeah.
Douglas, he comes in, gets on the mic, complains about the WWF. Trying to shake Marty's hand, the usual bullshit, he says. So he's trying to shake Marty's hand, trying to get in a cheap shot on Marty, but Marty, too smart, grabs the foot, does some moves. Nothing entertaining. I think he spins him around, gives him an atomic drop, typical 80 bullshit, WWF 80s bullshit. Quick start, though, by Jannetty, followed by a lot of stalling by Douglas. Going to the outside, just wasting time to make the match longer, which doesn't need to be done because fans aren't enjoying this shit. I did notice the Straw Hat guy this time has a purple hat on tonight. That's where my attention was at this point. More stalling, rest holds. Jannetty hits a crisp power slam, though. Kind of woke me up just for a second, though. Follows it up with a rest hold. So immediately kills that nice spot. Little offense, more rest holds, a low blow by Shane Douglas gets the biggest pop of the match. Jannetty, he hits some rocker-like offense, but immediately slows it down as they do some brawling into the crowd. We do get some crutch involvement from Douglas there. More brawling on the outside. Douglas, he does hit a backdrop onto a chair on Jannetty, which, alright. Jannetty, he hits a couple super kicks. On the outside, get a fucking Marty chant.
Marty, Marty.
I think they just, the fans were chanting out of spite. Jannetty hits the rocker dropper, but only gets a two. That's his finishing move, so I don't know. Where do we go from here? Massive super kick, which sounded terrific. Follows it up with a DDT, only gets a two because Douglas gets his foot on the rope. Douglas, he reverses a leapfrog into a powerbomb. And gets the three with a handful of tights.
Uno, dos, three.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that match? For me, this took all my power not to fast forward through this.
As soon as you saw who was wrestling.
Yeah. And what kind of match was going on. Shane Douglas, again, versus somebody who's, like, not really with the company, won't be defending his title. This was the longest fucking match on the card. Mm-hmm. Has my shortest amount of notes. The more and more we go on, the more and more I dislike Shane Douglas. The world champion should be headlining
every show. Okay.
Correct. He should be the most interesting person on the card, and he is not. He is none of those things. And again, like I said, defending against somebody who's not with the company or will not be here long with the company. And Marty Jannetty is not like a big name that's going to draw people in.
He's just a dude. Yeah. He's just a washed up dude.
Yeah, exactly. So any other thoughts, anything from that? Again, the only bonus for me is no Mr. Hughes. All right. So here comes the hot stepper. Kicks on as Johnny Grunge pushes Rocco Rock in a wheelchair to the ring. If you remember...
Didn't do so well with those tables, did
Yeah, correct. Last time, Sabu did drive Rocco Rock through the table, which was the final elimination, which won them the tag team titles. The Public Enemy explains Rock's injury and what's going on. They call out Malenko and Benoit, who come out in turn, and fisticuffs ensue as basically Rocco Rock is just sitting in a wheelchair trying to get away or back up.
And he does not get away.
No, and Benoit, Malenko work over Johnny Grunge real quick. It's kind of funny, Benoit grabs a chair from a crowd, but it takes him like 10 seconds because he's got to get the jacket off and then he can't fold it. And he finally hits Grunge over the head. And then the two hilariously start attacking Rocco Rock, pushing him around in the wheelchair.
Slammed into a guardrail.
Yeah, that was the best. And then you can kind of see like he's bleeding from the ribs, which I thought was pretty cool. A cool gimmick. But they literally just wheeled him at full speed into the fucking guardrail, which was just fucking hilarious. So then Sabu and Taz rush the ring, and we are automatically segued or shoved into our next match for the tag team titles. So we got Sabu, Taz, or as I like to call him, Taboo, versus
Benoit and Malenko,
which are in Shane Douglas's triple threat. So I'll be referring to them as the triple threat. Okay? Okay. So a lot of brawling to begin, but this is way more interesting brawling. Benoit with Sabu, Malenko with Taz. Sabu, he hits like a springboard leg drop. Taz hits a belly-to-belly, which gets a big pop because they're almost simultaneously. Only get two counts. Sabu tries the first pin, only gets two. Taz tries the second pin, only gets two. Triple threat. They keep Sabu at bay on the outside and start to double-team Taz on the inside. Malenko, he does hit a pair of devastating brainbusters on Sabu, but only gets a two. They try to stay away from vicious.
Nice job. I'm having
trouble with saying that. Awesome powerbomb bulldog combo by the triple threat. Off the Benoit's hitting a powerbomb while Malenko comes off almost like a reverse bulldog or hooking clothesline onto Sabu. But Taz foils them as he hits a T-bone on Malenko and a belly-to-belly on Benoit. Sorry, almost forgot who they were wrestling. This kind of breaks up the momentum. Taz, with a nice array of high-impact combo moves on both the heels, topped off with a German suplex.
The Germans.
Yeah, on Benoit there. Malenko, he finally clips Taz in the back of the knee as Taz had Benoit up electric chair position. So they start to work over Taz's knee there. So we get a little bit of storyline. Malenko does put on like a rest hold a little bit, but at least Benoit is sitting there stomping him, and it's not as boring as the last match. And it made sense because they injured his knee, now they're working over the knee. Whereas in the last match, they were just doing headlocks because they were tired. Double teaming on Taz for a little bit, and finally 911 and Paul E come out, and they actually 911 picks up Taz on his shoulders and takes him to the back. So we have Sabu competing 2-on-1 against
which is never threat. That's never good.
Sabu, he reverses a like double flapjack or backdrop with a double drop kick, 1 foot a man, kind of gets the upper hand, hits a nice like somersault plancha on Malenko on one side, and then a diving one on Benoit on the other side. Back to Malenko, he hits an acai moonsault from the apron to the floor. It's real badass. Sabu just kind of tearing it up at the minute, taking on both men here. He hits a diving crossbody from the ring to both on the outside. He does grab a table at this point, throws it in the ring, gets a huge pot. Gets a huge pop and actually gets a Sabu chance, which is pretty sweet. Sabu, he has the chair and the table, much like last time, set up on the top turnbuckle, but his plans are ruined by Benoit. As he hits him from behind, Sabu takes a nasty bump with the chair to the mat. Actually looked very painful, I think.
Per the rules of turnbuckle
shenanigans. Yes. Much like last time, it was used against him as well. So Benoit, he hits a super bomb from the top of the table to the mat as Paul E hits Malenko with his phone on the other side of the ring, but it's too little too late as Benoit pins Sabu 4-3, winning the match in the tag titles. What are your thoughts on the match?
Best match of the night. Wish it wouldn't have went to 2-1, but yeah. that couple minutes there where Sabu was going crazy was fun.
Yeah, high impact. There was a lot of high impact moves there. So we get Benoit on the mic. He calls out the public enemy who come out again. It's funny. Basically, Rock just lays in the corner and tries to hold himself up as Johnny Grunz surprisingly cleans house. 911 then brings back Taz and just kind of hoofs him in the ring. But then he picks him up and like press slams him onto the four other opponents on the outside, which would have been the triple threat and the public enemy. Sabu, he then does a dive to the outside from the top rope, and all six men begin to brawl as Paul E gets an emo ref's face. And then we get, just for nostalgia, a 911 choke slam on good old emo ref. Just for old time's sake, right?
For the freedom, for nostalgia, for fun. All
right. For me, this match was very emotional. I was emoting a lot of emotions during this. It really got me into it when they started hitting the high impact moves, the reversals, even watching Malenko and Benoit, they work great together. Although these are both like just two guys put together on each team, they still worked very well together. The tag team division is like leaps and bounds above the heavyweight title in Shane Douglas, in my book, at this point.
Agreed.
Anyway. I'm very satisfied. And a nice new title change.
You had like all their best talent in that ring.
Yeah, basically. There. Yeah. So you got like basically Taz who can do all the suplexes, Malenko and Benoit who are just crisp mat wrestlers, and right. Then Sabu can highlight reel. So you got all these different styles that do work together, unlike Too Cold Scorpio and Hector Guerrero. So it's very fun to watch, very entertaining, and definitely brought me around after the Shane Douglas match just sucked the life out of me. So we cut to Sandman and Woman as they call out Cactus Jack. So we're already getting into the main event.
This is the main one.
So we mentioned previously how Sandman was concussed accidentally by
a frying pan.
Correct. By Cactus Jack hitting him with a frying pan, which was not a gimmick frying pan.
It was a real legitimate pancake flipping frying pan.
With Teflon and all that bullshit in it. So, according to Pennsylvania, which I believe is true, and now it's nationwide at least, is basically part of a concussion protocol is you have to take a 21-day hiatus from whatever you're doing. Now they have a more targeted...
There's more defined rules.
Yeah. So it was promoted as Cactus versus Sandman previously, but since Sandman can't fulfill his contractual obligation, Sandman and Woman have this mystery opponent. And as they call out Jack, Sandman, they introduce us to DC Drake.
DC Drake.
So
he's an insider's insider.
DC Drake. He was a staple of Joel Goodhart's TWA, which I had mentioned earlier. He was the heavyweight champion there. And he is in fucking awful shape here. He has saggy man boobs. He looks like he's whiter than Casper. And he's wearing sweatpants, for God's sake. So it is what it is there. So this is your main event. Cactus Jack versus...
A guy.
Yeah, some guy. So Jack, Drake, they do brawl for a couple minutes here. Take it outside the ring. Jack, he does hit his patented elbow from the apron to the floor. Looks nice. He also hits the double arm DDT and gets a quick three count. So, I mean, this match was only about 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. Not much going on, just a lot of brawling. DC Drake, so out of shape. Looks so terrible. But the Sandman immediately attacks Cactus Jack post-match. He does get his hands on Woman, but she's saved by the Sandman and DC Drake. Jack, he hits another DDT on Drake and a Cactus Clothesline on the Sandman as they brawl to the outside and in front of this nice little box that actually DC Drake was sitting in to kind of hide the mystery opponent and what have you here. So eventually, Jack, he knocks the Sandman into the box, pulls out Sandman. He's now draped in the covering that was on top of it. Mm-hmm. So they get back into the ring. Eventually, the tarp comes off, and holy shit, it's fucking Terry Funk.
There he is. He's returned.
Yeah.
He is risen.
He was wearing Sandman's garb. So, like, he had the American Zubaz pants on. He had the Extreme Championship Wrestling shirt. It was wonderful. This gets a huge fucking pop. It was wonderful. The two exchange right hands. That's Cactus Jack and Terry Funk. Eventually, Funk and Sandman work over Cactus Jack, each having Singapore canes at this point. And then periodically, jobbers try to come in and out to save Cactus Jack, but they're unsuccessful as finally Dreamer comes out. Dreamer, he lays out the Sandman. Try him and Funk get in the face. Funk slaps him a couple times. Now remember, Dreamer was trained by Funk, and Funk's got the one that got him into the business. So this is like mentor versus student.
Like Darth Vader.
Correct. That's a perfect analogy. So Dreamer, he can't work up the nerve yet to hit him. And then once Funk slaps him a couple times, he's about to hit him, but gets caned by the Sandman before he can. So Funk, he gets on the mic and denotes himself heel by saying he doesn't care about the fans. And
good old-fashioned heel turn.
Correct. So Jack, you can hear him on the mic screaming for help, which is a nice little touch. This even actually causes Shane Douglas to come out and join in the fracas. Woman, who is trying to get Shane Douglas to kind of join with them, holding up the Four Horsemen because she used to manage them. Like that, and Douglas, because it would have been him, Funk, Sandman, Woman, and they were claiming the four there. So they hold Dreamer, or excuse me, they hold Cactus up for a belt shot. They want Douglas to hit him with the belt, but Douglas kind of swerves, hits the Sandman, starts hitting Funk, working over each
face turn.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's what it seems like, though. Hitting both with the belt as we fade to black, and that was your main event. So this was so fucking expertly done.
Here's what I like about it. Okay. One, we didn't have to watch the shitty guy wrestle. Right? Yeah, they use that perfectly.
Yeah.
And two, this just sets up like 37 different plot lines for the future.
Exactly. So like the Sandman, they were promoting this mystery wrestler, you know, and it turns out to be fucking DC Drake, you know, like very underwhelming to the fans. They then get the match over quickly, like it's only 4 minutes. And the way I do kind of like how DC Drake was somewhat of a surprise because he hadn't been in the ECW yet, but it's just so disappointing to see that considering what they had promoted. And they do the little switcheroo with the Sandman and Funk perfectly, as Funk has both Sandman's like shirt and pants on, and he's got the tarp over him. And then when that comes down, the fucking the fans go insane. Like Paul, this shows Paul E can still get one over on the fans. Mm-hmm. Which he did, which he states that like the fans had no idea, you know, and this was perfectly executed and booked,
and then it just ended like, yeah, that. Like that reminded me like those Monday Night Raws during the Attitude Era where they would just like wrestle and then all of a sudden like they would just go to the news. What the hell just happened?
Yeah.
And you didn't find out till the next week.
Yeah,
like
yeah. That's what you had to sit on it for a week or two.
Stew on it for 7 days, yeah.
Yeah, perfectly executed. This card was very underwhelming to start. I was kind of disappointed, like especially with the two tag matches.
But it makes sense though. They put all their talent in the championship tag match, and then with all the stuff at the end,
it did build up to a very entertaining finish.
Right.
The end, like we said multiple times, booked so well, brought out a lot of emotion. It was nice to see Funk again. He's been gone since before the title, the NWA title tournament. So he hasn't been technically in Extreme Championship Wrestling yet. Still making great steps towards or into 1995 here, showcasing a great talent. Did kind of start off dumb, but it definitely built up. So just, I wish maybe if the Douglas match was before the barbed wire baseball bat match, that would have just kept me peeking
right
afterwards. Because the baseball match then followed by the championship match really kind of sucked the life out of me, like I said there. So the only thing is, calling it Return of the Funker kind of ruins it. Right. Although being advertised up until this point, it didn't have a name. So it ruins it more or less just for the people
now
watching, yeah, or watching it on home video. But if you were there live in the audience, I bet it would have been a total, like, mind-blowing, mind-fuck, dude. So that's all I have on that. Any other things on the card as a whole?
I'm excited for the next one.
The next one? You know what the next one is.
I do not.
Next up, we have Three-Way Dance, which is a culmination of these tag teams all together.
Boom. Yeah.
Like, follow us on Facebook. You can watch us on Vimeo, YouTube. You can also listen to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And then if you want to help defray some of the costs, you know, help us out, you can check out our Patreon page at Extreme Wrestling Archive. Make a little donation if you feel so fit. And then join us next time as we reopen the Extreme Wrestling Archive.